Hey there, you're listening to What the Riff? Join us as we remember the great rock and roll hits from a month between 1965 and 1995. We're going to riff on all things about the bands, the members, and the goings-on during that time. We hope to inspire you to find and download the songs you hear today, whether you're fans who forgot about some of these tracks or maybe never even heard them before. Check out our blog at whattheriff.com or follow us on Facebook at What the Riff. Here's a shout out to our sponsors, Right Column Financial, offering CFO and bookkeeping services for small business, Stanton Electric, a commercial electrical specialist, and Marbury Creative Group, a brand development agency that helps companies tell it better. So let's turn up the volume and enjoy this episode of What the Riff?
A 38-year-old Muhammad Ali comes out of retirement to challenge undefeated world heavyweight champion Larry Holmes and is pounded unmercifully for 10 rounds before throwing in the towel. The Polish government legalized independent labor union solidarity, sowing the seeds of its own destruction, and Honduras and El Salvador signed a peace treaty ending the football war. We're in October 1980. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
And you're listening to What the Riff, and Bruce brings us this classic album.
Indeed. Yes, indeed.
All aboard.
Here we have John Michael Osborne.
Oh.
He's been known as Ozzy since elementary school. Yes, Ozzy Osbourne released his first solo album, Blizzard of Oz. The Prince of Darkness, the Godfather of Metal. This is his debut.
All right. I really never knew he had a name other than Ozzy.
Yeah, I didn't either. It's interesting that actually this was supposed to be a super group that was started, and they were going to be known as Blizzard of Oz.
Oh.
So the lineup is, of course, Ozzy Osbourne on lead. We've got Randy Rhoads on electric and classical guitars. Bob Daisley is on bass. He's from Rainbow. Don Airey is on keyboards, who's also from Rainbow. And Lee Kershake on percussion. He was from Uriah Heep.
Hmm. Bruce, I hope I'm not jumping the gun, but who was the producer of this album?
The producer of this album. You are jumping the gun a little bit there, but that's all right. I believe if what you're talking about is Don Arden. Is that who you're talking about? The manager?
I was actually thinking about Mrs. Ozzy Osbourne.
Well, yes, you are definitely jumping the gun.
I am jumping the gun. Okay.
We'll get to that story in a little bit.
Sorry about that.
This, by the way, if we haven't called the name yet, if we have to name it, because this is absolutely iconic, this is Crazy Train. It's the first single. It was written by Osbourne. It was written by Daisley and Rhoads. Osbourne, Daisley, and Rhoads wrote a lot of the songs that are on this this album. And it's about the Cold War and the feeling that everything is just, you know, falling apart. You know, it's not too late to learn how to love and to forget how to hate.
All right, Bruce, that's not the meaning to me. Now, in the United States, we have a thing called baseball. And there was a player in Atlanta that came out to Crazy Train.
Chipper Jones,
the future Hall of Famer from here, would come out on Crazy Train. And that would get the crowd jacked up.
Oh, yeah.
He came out there, and he was usually great in the clutch. And so if you have not seen anything, I know it's on YouTube, on to Crazy Train. But, yeah, that kind of kept it alive for me.
That's a fun memory.
Absolutely. Well, he didn't come out to Crazy Train when it was released in 1980. and by the way, let me just go ahead and say,
it was in the 90s.
Let me just say this. I am cheating a little bit because this album was released in England in September of 1980. And it was in the U.S. in March of 1981. So I'm cheating a little bit.
So this is kind of based on the U.K. release.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, that lyric right there, it says, "Heirs of the Cold War, that's what we've become. Inheriting troubles, I'm mentally numb." So that's where the Cold War bit comes in.
So his lyrics had meaning, huh?
Of course. Not much meaning, but a little bit.
He'd have been surprised with all the drugs he was doing. Yeah. My goodness.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, that brings up an interesting story about how it is that he ended up making this album. He was... Do you remember where he was at before this?
Yeah, he was with Black Sabbath.
That's right. That's right. And so and he was actually fired from Black Sabbath.
Geezer told him to get out.
Yeah, we'll get into that just in just a little bit. But that's what he had actually started working on this in back in 1978. So it's not like this is, you know, completely new. But there's a bit of a story to it that that I think is interesting.
Listen and laugh.
Isn't that neat?
It's like he got the helium song. Voice.
Yes.
It's such a good song.
That's awesome.
So this next one is the second single from the album, believe it or not, although I don't think it really got that much play. I heard it on 96 Rock a time or two, but not often.
Oh, I remember it.
I love the way this thing starts.
Has kinda that got evil that, sound.
It does. It's that Phantom of the Opera sound,
yeah,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
So the only singles from the album were Crazy Train and this one, which is Mr. Crowley.
Who was Mr. Crowley, Bruce?
I'm glad you asked, Rob. There is a story to that. So Mr. Crowley is referring to Aleister Crowley, and it's actually mispronounced. It was supposed to be Crawley, is the way his name was actually said. Aleister Crowley was an English occultist and magician from the early 20th century.
Mr. Crowley.
There we go.
What went on in
and it's Ozzy had read a book about Aleister Crowley and was inspired to write the song based on that book, and they found a deck of tarot cards in the studio where they were recording. So he was like, okay, we'll do something on this.
I'm so glad you brought this one, because I remember it, but I don't think I've heard this in forever. I didn't have this album.
Yeah,
but I'm digging this.
I had this album, and I played the fool out of this album. This is a great... All of the songs are really good on it.
Although, you play it before or after church?
I'm trying to remember if this made it to the youth trips or not. A number where I learned a lot of my rock songs in my early days was church youth trips.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
You learn a lot at church.
Absolutely. Yeah. Learn how to play Guts. So that's for a story for a different day. But it's just this whole album kind of takes me back to that day. The two albums that he did first, the Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman, just fantastic albums. And listen to that Randy Rhoads going
on. Yeah.
Well, one thing about Aleister Crowley, if I remember right, Jimmy Page bought his house.
Oh, did he?
And he recorded a bunch of stuff there. So supposedly, you know, that's where. They kept on saying he was the satanic guy.
Yeah.
So all these heavy metal groups were kind of referring to him, hence what Ozzy
was doing.
I
can see that. Well, and one of the things that really makes this is Randy Rhoads on guitar.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you remember what happened with Randy Rhoads. He died in a plane crash in Florida during the Diary of a Madman tour. He died on March 19th, 1982.
Wasn't he buzzing the RV
or
something like that?
Well, it was really sad what I read about it, because he was kind of afraid to fly. And the pilot was buzzing the bus and basically Ozzy was asleep in the bus and some other folks were asleep, and they were just trying to get their attention and whatnot. And he clipped I think he clipped the edge of the bus or a tree or something like that.
Oh, no.
It just destroyed the plane.
Wow.
It was very bad. But Randy Rhoads died in that, and then they worked to replace him. I actually had a friend, this will be a shout out to Andy Arrowood, who saw Ozzy Osbourne three times with three different guitars. He saw Randy Rhoads, and he saw the next two that played for him. But his playing is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Listen to that.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Yeah, this is at a time when heavy metal was sort of in a dark place. It was it was not popular at all.
Mm-hmm.
You had AC/DC, some Van Halen and Ozzy, and that was about it. You had some English bands that were going real good at the time, but in the pre-MTV era, there wasn't any heavy metal or hard rock really going on.
Right, right. Well, you didn't see this one on MTV, that's for sure. You got Ozzy kind of caught up, you know, in the mid-80s, but this was, of course, this is pre-MTV by just a little bit. But yeah, you didn't hear Ozzy on MTV. But yeah, Randy Rhoads, man, what a phenomenal guitarist. So the next one that we're going to hear is the first track written for the album, and it was Ozzy's way of saying goodbye to his former band.
Oh, which would be Black Sabbath.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So we'll let that one kind of get in there. This is a kind of a slow song.
Yeah,
I see
it didn't
Wayne
seem like
looking
it
over
goes,
there.
I was like, is this really Ozzy?
But yep. It was a nasty breakup, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it? Because they fired him.
Right.
Well, fired him why? So why did they fire him?
So
Bruce?
That's
surprise,
well, I'm
surprise.
Glad you asked, Wayne. So Black Sabbath fired him after their 8th studio album called Never Say Die. They had a lot of problems with the recording sessions, basically because they were all doing drugs. They would get drugged up, they'd go over to the session, and surprisingly, they couldn't play their instruments.
Imagine that. Yeah.
So they had a lot of trouble with that. They finally got it going. The tour started in May of 1978, and reviewers thought that Black Sabbath's performance was tired and uninspired compared to the youthful performance of their opening act.
Ooh.
Do you know who their opening act was?
I bet you it's the Clash.
Van Halen.
Van Halen.
Van Halen. Oh, yeah.
Now, if they were having trouble, you really don't want to play in. You don't have Van Halen opening for you.
Right.
You know?
I heard Aerosmith had Van Halen open them for him, and they pulled plug on them.
I'll bet they had the same problem.
As did Journey.
Yes, that's right.
Journey said no. Because what would happen in concerts is Van Halen would play their hour, 40 minutes to an hour, and just kick ass. Then Journey came out and did theirs, and then the band started yelling for Van Halen to come back out.
Well, anyway, getting back to it, the band fired Osborne in April of 1979, and the claim was that he was, quote, unreliable and had excessive substance abuse issues compared to the other members.
Wow.
That was a high bar to compare
to. That's from Wikipedia right there. And Ozzy got 96,000 pounds for his share of the Black Sabbath name, and he kind of expected that he would go, as was quoted in, again, Wikipedia, go back to Birmingham and the Dole. That's what he expected to happen.
Oh.
So Black Sabbath's manager was a guy named Don Arden, and he was hoping that Ozzy would return to the band. So what he did is he signed him to Jet Records and sent him to Los Angeles to record his own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent his daughter to look after Ozzy and protect his investment. Now, who was that daughter?
I think her first name was Sharon.
No, it wasn't.
Well,
say it right. It was Sharon!
There you go.
I need to put the accent in there correctly. I'm sorry.
Yes. So Sharon Arden went with the band, went with Ozzy to kind of look after him.
As an investment.
As an investment. As an investment. And the rest, as they say, is history. But you know,
well, she did end up managing him.
She did.
And she did. He became from Ozzy, the straight hair, to the puppy hair, the big, you know, outrageous outfits and things like that later on. I mean, he became the big hair band.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, in the following up albums.
But the thing is, Ozzy is one of these, he's like an unlikely, like an anti-hero almost, you know, because he's had such staying power. I don't think there has been a time where he hasn't been popular to some extent.
Well, he had a resurgence when back in the 90s, they had the Osbournes.
Right.
And it was supposed to be a takeoff on all those old 50s TV shows that, you know, like Father Knows Best and things of that sort. Here's this, you know, typical American family, the Osbournes.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You got to see Jack Osborne, and you got to see Sharon and all of them, and you just kind of saw kind of how dysfunctional it was, and you kind of got to see the side of a rock and roller who just really didn't have it all there until he was on the stage.
Well, and here's the thing. I think And if Ozzy is listening to this, my apologies, Mr. Osborne, but I think that's really kind of who he is, you know? That he just had this constitution that he could survive it all, you know, the drugs and the alcohol and all of this stuff. But I mean, one of the things that I read was that when Sharon and Ozzy were married, Sharon had it done specifically on July 4th, Independence Day for the United States, to help Ozzy remember the day.
I wonder if he was married before.
He was.
Oh.
In fact, he was married at the time that he went to Los Angeles.
Oh.
So his wife, I believe it was Thelma, was his original wife.
Thelma Osborne.
And she was, he had kids by his previous
oh, wow.
marriage. Yeah, it was very, very rocky. Not a good situation.
I don't know if you
all.
Said the name of this song. It's
I'm sorry. The name of the song is Goodbye to Romance.
Yeah.
And this was one of the first songs that he wrote, and he wrote it about being breaking up from Black Sabbath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that was a good one. A little bit softer than we're used to hearing from him.
Now, this next one is one that you will recognize, although I was surprised to see it was not released as a single. And that, my friend, is a gong being played backwards.
Cool.
There we go.
This wasn't a single?
Yeah, it was not. I was surprised at that because I heard it on 96 Rock all the time.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, really. I get chill bumps because it's been a while since I really listened to this song.
And again, Randy Rhoads' guitar licks are just phenomenal in this one. So I looked on Song Facts on this, and there was some suggestions on Song Facts that this was also about Ozzy's departure from Black Sabbath, like where he says, "How do I know I got left behind?"
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way the lyrics sound to me. I think this is more like Moody Blues, just a singer in a rock and roll band.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of, I'm not a hero. Don't ask me. I don't know. You know, that's kind of what I think this is about. Don't look at me as being some kind of hero. I'm just a singer.
Yeah, I have not heard this song in a long time, and I am enjoying this.
Yeah, this is a good one. I was never really a big Ozzy fan, but I am. I've gained a great appreciation for his songwriting capability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never really appreciated that.
And listening to Rhoads on the guitar again.
Well, that certainly helps.
Phenomenal.
Of course, he recently had a TV show also with him on the road. That was kind of endearing.
Oh, yeah?
With his son, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that was kind of cool. Of course, unfortunately, he's having some medical issues now that he's no longer able to tour. And that was sad because he announced a tour and then...
Had to cancel.
Yeah, I had to cancel the entire tour. So yeah. I was looking forward to it. I was actually... asking people to go, hey, let's go.
Yeah, and for those
and they kept
you,
on saying, I don't know.
for the listeners that don't know what Wayne's referring to, Ozzy was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's. So that's a crippling disease, as we all know.
Well, he sounds and always has sounded so much better and clearer in his music than he does in real life talking.
Yeah,
it's much easier to understand him.
Yeah,
singing.
He mumbles quite a bit.
Yes.
That Birmingham mumble.
Yes.
Birmingham, England mumble.
Oh, yeah, listen to this. I love this.
Great song.
Nice bridge.
It's not how you play the game, it's if you win or lose. I've always enjoyed that line, too.
You can choose.
Well, there's one interesting thing in music of October 1980. A riot breaks out at a Black Sabbath concert, believe it or not.
Really?
It was in Milwaukee after bassist Geezer Butler is hit in the head by a bottle and the band just quits on the stage. They all leave and then a riot happens.
Oh, gosh.
To go in line with that, seven are stabbed at a Blood, Sweat, and Tears concert in Los Angeles.
See what happens when you write songs about Mr. Crawley?
Apparently. And John Linden you know, Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols is sentenced to 3 months of an imprisonment for assault charges. We get a little violent here in 1980, aren't we?
Just a little bit.
And Paul Kantner of Jefferson Starship is rushed to the hospital following a cerebral hemorrhage. He soon recovers without surgery and sort of defies medical odds.
Wow.
That's what's happening in the music of October 1980.
Nice.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, like you said, you know, there was not a whole lot of hard metal rock going on. And I guess what you kind of, you think you had a transition with, was there punk going on at this time?
Yes, indeed.
Punk was sort of on the tail
well, new
end
wave.
Of that. That was the new wave.
New
was,
wave
the,
was
yeah,
there, right?
Over to new
yeah,
wave,
new
so.
Wave was starting. Yeah, because yeah. you had
cars,
the Cars.
Blondie.
Well, I've got the top hits. I mean, October 1980. Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. Woman in Love by Barbara Streisand. Upside Down, Diana Ross.
Boy, you
disco.
Turned me.
Yeah. All Out of Love by Air Supply. You had that Air Supply and REO Speedwagon having the mellow songs coming out. He's So Shy by Pointy Sisters. You know, I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins. I mean, it was sort of, you know, it's
Caddyshack.
Very, very popular pop songs. They're not really rock.
Yeah. I did like I'm All Right. I thought that was good, but that explains why I know, remember these, why I do remember these Ozzy Osbourne songs. Thanks for bringing this album. This is
my
great
pleasure.
One. All right, that was great, Bruce. Now we're getting into our entertainment track, brought to us by Right Column Financial. And what do we have here?
And guys, premiering on ABC Saturday mornings. You remember when those cartoons came out? This was Thundar the Barbarian. We had Cosmic Destruction of the Earth in what year?
1994, he just said. Way in the future, right?
And then it took 1,000 years and Thundar came around. 2,000 years. Also, the Heathcliff, the cat cartoon came out at that time. I actually watched both of these. I guess it was Saturday morning. He was kind of hung over from the night before. I was first year in college at this time, so. But, you know, turn these on. But this was always fun to watch.
A good hangover remedy, huh?
Exactly.
Well, let's go on to staff picks here. We're going to kick it off with Wayne's staff pick. What do you got for us, Wayne?
Sort of Chinese sounding, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, I recognize that riff.
Oh, yeah.
Get the bass coming up.
Now, I'm sure you may cover this, but is this Entwistle playing on his bass, playing before him? Because it sounds like something he could play.
Oh, yeah, he's getting into it. This, guys, is not The Who.
No.
You know that I'm a big Who fan, but this is a side project with Pete Townsend. It's his second solo album, Empty Glasses. And to me, Rough Boys, one of those songs that's closest to that Who angst.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was The Who.
Yeah, there's a lot of Pete Townsend's music is difficult for me to distinguish from
yes.
The Who.
Yeah.
And this, Roger Daughtry actually kind of felt let down because he thought a lot of the songs off this album, including Rough Boys and the song Empty Glasses, really should have been a Who song. Because not only was he doing songs for this album, he was doing songs for the upcoming Who album called Face Dances. And this was the first album after Pete Moon died, and Kenny Jones was taken over as drummer. He was with the Small Faces and the Faces.
That sounds so much like Entwistle on the bass.
Yeah, it
just strong bass chord.
I was more concerned because Kenny Jones played the drum
sure.
on this, but I'm sure he did. But like I said, this should have been one of those things that really should have been on a Who album.
Right.
The Face Dances, there's some good songs on that, but just, you know, when you should have had one album combined instead of two.
Gonna get inside you.
This song, guys, is dedicated to
gonna
the Sex Pistols.
Is it really?
Yes.
Officially?
Yeah, officially. It's also dedicated to his children, but it's, you know, the Sex Pistols thing. This is sort of one of those things where it's the older dude who, you know, was the hard rock of the 60s kind of talking to the guys in the late 70s. And, you know, it also has some homoerotic feel to it. It's, you know, I want to give you a kiss, you know, and stuff like that. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, One guy from AllMusic calls it a blistering punk love letter. You know, considered one of the greatest solo efforts. I mean, I just love this.
It's really rocking.
Yeah, it is. It's solid.
Rock star Alice Cooper says of the songs, "You have Pete's sexual ambiguity going on here. It sounds like a gay song, but I still don't know exactly what he's trying to say with this song, but I love it. Whatever it is, Pete's an amazing mystery."
Well, didn't he come out in an interview and basically say he was bi?
I think he said he dabbled. It's back when, you know,
he dabbled.
Well, you know,
I'm not gay. I just dabbled in it a little bit.
You know, it was sort of one of those drug things. But he's been married and he has kids. And it's one of those things. Is, you know, he was abused when he was younger. And that's sort of how Tommy came about, the whole thing there. And there's other things we'll get into when we do the album Tommy, which comes around. But what's interesting is at the end of this song, Townsend just said he just started playing everything. He just wanted to play all the different songs. I love this. He's just complicated chords all over the place.
That's got to be in Twistle.
It's not. It's Tony Butler.
Tony Butler, wow.
For the other songs on this album, Let My Love Open the Door and Gonna Get You. That's another song. I almost did that one, but I just love this one. This one just...
It's definitely a heavy driving song.
Very hard finish, too.
Ready?
Oh, man.
Yep.
Fantastic.
That's a driving one, man.
That's a great cutoff.
Yeah, thanks for that. So...
Speaking of another
driving song. We've all heard this, and I wonder why. Well, maybe because in October of 1980, after it hit the charts, it was number one for 3 weeks, and it spent 15 weeks in the Billboard Top 10. Mm-hmm. It was the longest-running Top 10 song of 1980. This is Queen. Another one bites the dust.
Great song, Rob. Good song. Good pick.
This is from their 8th album, which is called The Game. It's got a lot of interesting sounds going on. You hear those sound effects?
Yep.
So they recorded this in West Germany, in Munich, and Deacon, who wrote this, the bass player, he played bass guitar, piano, electric guitar, and did the hand clapping. And then Roger Taylor did a drum loop. And then Brian May used his guitar and tied it in with an even-tied harmonizer. There were no synthesizers. Listen
really?
To the sound.
Really?
No synthesizers. They played the tape in reverse at different speeds to create some of the different sounds you're hearing. You can hear how it's
sort of like
going.
That gong we
exactly.
heard.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. The gong going backwards. A little piece of trivia. This song was initially considered for Rocky III.
Was it really?
But they couldn't get their act together. And you'll remember who broke out after they...
That was Eye of the Tiger, yep. Survivor.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, this is also the time, according to the movie, since I know we've all seen it here,
yeah,
and many of our listeners have seen it, they were in the midst of bickering quite a bit. And basically, the bassist, what was his name again, John?
John Deacon.
John Deacon. Started just playing the chord, the bass chord.
Yep.
And then they all kind of stopped their fighting for a second. And they go, "That's really good." And he goes, "What did he say in the movie?" He says, "Now, if you just shut up and play."
Well, I remember too in the movie that kind of the disco-ish nature of this really put them off.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen to those sounds.
Oh, I love
it. Funny that there's no
way ahead of their time. Way ahead of their time.
Well, if you remember, there was kind of a dark part of this song. If you were in Atlanta in October of 1980,
yeah.
You probably remember the controversy.
Yep.
There were these, they were having the missing and murdered children in Atlanta. These
Wayne Williams.
Disappearing.
Yeah. Wayne Williams.
They didn't know at the time that it was Wayne Williams, and they've only actually tied him to a couple of these. However, there was these two disc jockeys. They were on Z93, Ross and Wilson, and there was a rumor that they were offered a gig in New York City, and they were trying to get out of their contract. And so there was a news report that talked about another child was reported missing, or they found him, and he was expired, dead. And
they said, this is dedicated to the missing and murdered children in Atlanta, and they played this song. And they were fired and off the air before the song
the
ended.
Before the song was over.
Man, that was shock jock before shock jock.
So that was a sad part, but it was a great song.
Absolutely.
So hope Good you guys pick. Enjoyed that.
Good pick, Rob.
Moving on to our next staff pick, and Brian, it sounds like he hasn't. Oh, it sounds like, hello.
Brian, get off your phone. We're doing staff picks.
It's not ELO, gentlemen, I promise you.
I recognize those pipes.
Oh, man, yeah. Glass Houses. This is Billy Joel.
That was a great album.
And this, I have to confess, is one of the funniest, but it's still one of the best songs off the album. It's called Sometimes a Fantasy.
What album is that?
Glass Houses.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's
this
a great album cover.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't he throwing a brick through a glass house?
Yeah.
But if you think about it, there is no internet. So they can't fantasize about, you know, going to websites or anything. This is pretty much it. If you wanted to, you know, this song is literally about phone sex. So.
1-900.
Yeah. So anyway, the video is, and I'm sure we'll put it on our Facebook page, but the video is just, you know, it's got him, he's basically holding the phone, singing the song.
Uh-huh.
And there's a beautiful woman on the other side of the phone. And there's basically his alter ego in the room with him, with a beard, and he's talking to, he's just kind of going, keep going, keep going.
I actually had a co-worker get fired. He would actually sneak off back in the 80s and actually call these numbers, the 1-900 numbers, on the company phone. Yeah. And they finally tracked it down who it was, and that guy was fired on the spot.
Absolutely. But essentially, this song, was Joel was very careful about being too controversial.
Right.
He was able to skim around the controversial lyrics enough to get where it bypassed the censors.
Yeah.
But if you listen to it, the melody is just incredible.
Yes.
And it's just, I mean, this is one of those songs that you, at least for me, I'm playing the cassette, and this came on, especially right here. Here it goes.
That's neat.
It just, but the bass is just, the bass chords are just incredible in this song. But turns out, when he was introducing this song in concert, according to Song Facts, Joel told the story about it being inspired by a girl named Debbie, and who he was into, but the farthest that he got with it was talking on the phone.
Now it's texting. About as far as you get is texting.
I remember
ghost them.
Now, as a teenager, that was the thing. You would talk to, you know, talk to folks on the phone. But
there
you
used
didn't.
To be a line that you could call and you could talk to people in like a group chat or something.
That wasn't in the 80s, though.
No,
this is back the 90s.
In the 80s, I remember, you know,
yeah,
that's.
You would call.
But you would call. I mean, I'm talking about in high school.
Right.
You would talk. Yeah. You know, you'd call girls in high school, and that's how you kind of talked with them. You know, you didn't. Yeah. You didn't have the internet. You didn't have texting. You didn't have all of this other stuff.
How many times did your mom have to tell you to get off the phone?
Get off the phone. Yeah, you didn't have private phones either. You had one phone for the house.
Yep,
and it was hooked to the wall, and you had about a 20-foot
right.
cord. You had to try to hopefully make it to your bedroom. You know,
at least somewhere you could shut the door.
That was
fun when Brian.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Good memory.
We bring it all around, and Bruce is gonna share a little bit with us here for our last staff pick. What do you got?
Indeed. All right, guys. Time for a little salsa.
Boy, that takes me back.
I haven't heard this song in a while. This is the lead single off Paul Simon's fifth studio album called One Trick Pony, and the song is called Late in the Evening.
And this was just him without Garfunkel.
It was just him without Garfunkel.
And he
obviously
does five
has the
by himself.
Right.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I remember this.
You remember this now?
Oh, yeah.
He's such a great storyteller.
He is. And the thing I like about Paul Simon is his voice is not that flashy. I mean, if you listen, he's singing in a very narrow range that you can do for, you know, years and years and years rather than the high stuff.
Right.
I'll go on the limb and say, hey, I like Paul Simon's single stuff than when it was with Simon Garfunkel. I know those are classic songs, Bridge Over Troubled Water. But Kodachrome, you got these songs, The 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover. I mean, this one.
I agree, Wayne. If you like some of this Paul Simon stuff and you haven't heard it, get his Negotiations and Love Songs Greatest Hits. I had that on CD and wore it out. It was just great stuff. So this also, One Trick Pony, was also a semi-autobiographical movie that Simon starred in. So I didn't realize that he had done that. Yeah.
Smoke himself a J.
Uh-oh. So this is about, this part is about, and according to Song Facts, it's about a dream that Simon had when he was a teenager of being a rock star. And this is what he remembers, being underage in this funky bar. And yeah, almost certainly what he was talking about is stepping outside to smoke a joint.
Oh yeah.
He should have had edibles by then.
Late in the evening.
I like too that I didn't realize this, the drumming on this, the drummer is Steve Gadd, and he is playing with two pairs of drumsticks in each hand. So he's got two drumsticks in each hand. And it just to give it a sound of a bigger drum set.
Interesting.
I don't know why, but this reminds me of the Bahamas. Just
it's the salsa sound.
It is that
fun, tropical, more relaxed. It's not the deep Caribbean, but it's out there off the coast of Florida.
Very Latin.
Yep. And it was late in the evening with all the music. And then you get this horns coming out.
Oh, we had the horns before. Now we got the drums.
Oh, yeah. Got the drum. We got to build it now.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, I can see a conga line for this.
Oh, definitely.
What was those booze cruises? You know, you get on those. I saw a guy drink himself completely stupid. And they were just, we were coming to the dock. And I was a little messed up, too. But he got in a fight with his girlfriend. And he just decided he was going to jump off overboard. Next thing you know, the police are coming, everything else.
Oh, wow.
He tried to swim to shore. It was just too funny.
He literally jumped overboard?
He jumped overboard. Oh, yeah, it's one of those boats that holds like 50 to 100 people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not like one of the giant ships or anything.
No, it's a booze cruise is what they called it. They take you out in the morning and come back in the evening and you are feeling good.
Late in the evening.
That was a good one. Yeah,
good
memory for that. That's a fun one. Now we're getting into either our laugh track or our instrumental, and we're going to go with an instrumental here, and I believe you picked this one out as well, didn't you, Bruce?
I did. So this is the one from our Fins the Police. It's called Behind My Camel, and it's off of Zenyatta Mandata. This was written by Andy Summers, and the rest of the group hated it, but it did very well. it won the Best Rock Instrumental Performance in 1982. It was awarded in 1982, but obviously
the album
it was written,
came out in October of 80. And at that time, the Police just started getting to become more popular.
What a great album, though. Zenyatta Mandata.
Yeah,
oh,
we're
man.
We're going to have to cover the Police soon, along with a lot of groups. Even Billy Joel. I've said before, we got Piano Man sitting out there just kind of waiting to be done. Some other bands that had albums come out. Prince had Dirty Mind. This was a very early Prince.
Mm-hmm.
The Talking Heads, Remain the Light. NXS.
Mm-hmm.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, Faces. The Dire Straits, Making Movies. Talk
Ooh,
about a really
that's
good
a good
album.
One. Yep.
Bruce Springsteen, The River.
Mm-hmm.
U2 had Boy. Donna Summer had The Wanderer. OMD and Aretha Franklin both had albums out. The Damned and The Clash. Talking about your punk guys coming out.
Yep.
George Thorogood and The Destroyers had an album out also.
I love that this is called Follow My Camel.
Behind My Camel.
Sorry, Behind My Camel. It sounds kind of like something that you would hear in Morocco or Egypt or something like that to me.
We didn't get to film of October 1980. Private Benjamin was the big comedy film, if you remember. Goldie Hawn.
Yes, Goldie Hawn, yep.
She got dumped and decided to join the Army. And really, it was one of the top box office hits of 1980. Superman 2 and Oh God 2. Those remakes, or second versions of those, came out. The Elephant Man, I never saw that. I just thought that was like, okay, we're making fun of or doing a movie about somebody's grotesque
deformity.
Jamie Lee Curtis had another horror film. It was called Terror Train. I guess she just was trying all those out. Motel Hell was a comedy horror film.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
Those are about all that was happening in October 1980. You've been listening to What the Riff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Rob.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Bruce.
Hope to see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to What the Riff. We hope you enjoyed the songs we had on tap today. Please tell your friends about us. Check us out at whattheriff.com and follow us on Facebook. Special thanks to our sponsors, Wright Column Financial, Stanton Electric, and Marbury Creative Group. That's all for this week. See you next week on What the Riff?